Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Whoa, listen to that pour of Bogotá wine. Dr. Turnbull, in studio, please talk to us about your wine for 2 seconds.
Wine from just south of Barcelona, Grenache Blanca. Americans have no idea what a Grenache Blanca is, and we have Brad and Jonathan here to give a tasting notes.
This is a delicious wine. It's really nice, light, and crisp. This has some good minerality to it. Yeah, I think it would pair really well with what we have on the menu right now, would be a scallop dish. What do you think, Mr. Black?
Yeah, I think the acidity of the wine would go very nicely with the balance with the acidity from the apricots, and then there's a brown butter sauce on the dish that would kind of help cut that fattiness.
You know what? I've had this dish. I've actually had it twice. I agree with you guys 100%. Dr. Turnbull, any other notes?
No, you can find it on the website. If you guys are listening, just click and buy it and take it from there. That's
it. Once again, Bogotá, Savorian Wine, sponsor of The Morning After. Stay tuned. We're here live at Roberta's. A radio legend and a New York City food legend just walked into the studio, Arthur Schwartz. I'm honored to have him here. I used to listen to this guy when I was a kid making deliveries for Andrew and Allen's Bakery in Staten Island, New York on Saturdays and Sunday mornings and hear about mediocre restaurants in Midtown. And, you know, actually Daniel Blue was just coming on the scene at that time and actually just really excited about that. Other than that, we have a ton of stuff going on. Gina Hong, our foreign correspondent, covered the food and wine all weekend. I have Jim Chu in studio. He's going to do a segment at the end called Two with Chu. I have a guy here who wants to become anonymous, be called anonymous. He's a Yelper. He's out in the community. It's sort of that Yelp side of the restaurant equation. And the co-owner of a pizzeria you may or may not have heard of, but I definitely, coming from a pizza background, I think you should at least check out once. It's hard to, he loves the history of pizza and he's embraced it, and he's doing a slice oriented kind of a place. I mean, are you doing a lot of pies over there, Frank?
Or? Yeah, we're doing a lot of pies, but I would definitely consider it a New York Slice Pizzeria.
New York Slice. But he embraces the heritage of it, which I love, because a lot of these modern pizzerias sort of have forgotten about 100 years of what's been going on in New York City. First, I just want to jump right into... I want to jump right into Gina. Thank you.
Thank you Gina, for having me.
Gina Hong, what is your title here?
So I'm a foreign correspondent from Cornell University. I'm still in school.
And you were covering the food and wine event all weekend for me.
Yes.
And we're going to go into a couple of interviews. The first I want to bring up is what to do and what not to do. And actually, Arthur Schwartz later will tell us what to do after the fact, after my opinions. Mm-hmm. The first interview I want to bring up, which I thought was a sort of a mediocre kind of interview, which was with David, David Burke. Jack, can we pull that up?
Well, my inspiration for cooking is, when I was a youngster, it was more of the creativity, the gratification you get on a daily basis, the hard work, the teamwork in the kitchen is pretty satisfying. It's almost sport.
So here's
yeah. So exactly, that's the so that was David Burke. It was sort of a mediocre kind of a thing. It was just a general question, mm-hmm. which was great. But for podcast kind of stuff,
it was the first person
we're
that
looking
I
for something. We're looking for something more interesting. Then I showed up, mm-hmm. And I sort of got the Abe and Arthur chef a little pissed off because I asked him a couple of questions about how he won. Abe and Arthur's Jack, can you pull that one up?
It's great. It's everything. I mean, you know, you come here, you try to impress, obviously, all the people. And I'm so happy that my friend Josh Capon won People's Choice again the second time he won. But I'll tell you, the judges, they're knowledgeable. Two perfect scores. I couldn't ask for more.
Jeff, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Did you order enough meat from Pat LaFrieda this week to win the award or no?
I don't think there's anything to do with it, buddy.
Can I ask you another question? Are you jealous of Catch opening this week? Did that take away a little bit from this, from Catch opening? Isn't that part of the same group, the one group?
No, it's not the one group. It's EMM Group, and I am the executive chef of EMM Group.
Yeah, so he was
very, very happy.
He was not happy about that interview because he's a chef, apron authors. He opened a restaurant called Catch. I was at the Friends and Family last week. And whatever, it was just kind of like throwing a question out there to him. And, you know, a lot of these food and wine events, it's the sponsorship and stuff, and it all kind of plays hand in hand. But it's like, of course, you know, the judges are this, A, and then you're a big, huge client of them, and they're trying to promote you. You might win. That's not necessarily a fact, but it might play a lot into it. So that was the thing. And then also I have to compliment you on this last interview, and this is what is sort of an informative kind of interview. And this is ABC Kitchen, Dan Kluger. Mm-hmm. Jack, please pull it up.
Correspondent for Morning After with Jason Colucci, and this is Chef Kluger,
Dan
from
Kluger, yep.
ABC Kitchen. So I just have a quick question from you.
Sure.
So recently I had your crab toast, which was amazing, blew my mind. What inspired
It actually did.
You know, we wanted to do simple American food based on the farmers, based on local, and essentially organic or all natural. Things like that, you know, we have a local source in Maine for hand-picked crab meat, and just wanted to do something with it, and we wanted to do some toast, like bruschetta kind of stuff, and it just worked.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically an informative question that would kind of be cool. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm here teaching you for your next segment. And then I asked Mark Forgione, who has a restaurant in Tribeca called Mark Forgione. I asked him about two Tribeca Tritons, David Boulay and Drew Nepore, and who would win in a fight. I think it's the second question in this segment, and he answered it.
Can you introduce me about yourself?
Sure. My name is Mark Forgione.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're from?
I'm from restaurant Mark Forgione.
Yep.
You know? And I'm hanging out here at the Burger Bash, having a good time. And
how was your night?
My night was good. I finished second place in the judging.
Uh-huh.
And,
absolutely.
You know?
Congratulations.
There's only one more place better than that.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, I would have loved that place, but it didn't happen, so.
Chef, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If Drew Nepore and David Boulay were in a fight, who would win?
David Boulay is like sneaky. I feel like he's like a ninja.
You know, it was a perfect answer too, because it's totally true. If anyone knows those two people, David Boulay is this kind of sneaky kind of.
I would have personally loved to hear his first answer, which was in that dead silence right after you asked him, which he completely suppressed and then said, I think that David Boulay would win.
And that's perfect. Thanks. That's Jim Chu from Joe's Restaurant, who's actually going to have a segment at the end of the show called A Two with Chu. Thank you for actually getting your voice out there and let everybody hear it so we know kind of the association. But I wanted to thank Gina for coming into the city. You're a student at Cornell.
Yes, I am.
You're what we call a hotelie. You're not part of like the real school part of it, right?
Oh, wow.
That was a joke. No, Arthur Schwartz is here.
He's okay.
I'm sorry. She is the real part of the school.
Thank you.
Awesome. That was awesome. Of course, I'm kidding around.
It's the hotelies who keep you in business. It's the chefs who put you out of business.
Oh! Thank you, Arthur Schwartz.
Okay.
Like I said, we will all talk and we will learn. But thank you for coming in. We're doing a show up at Cornell. We're probably going to do Slope Day in May. But before that, you'll probably have your cover a couple events. I knew you were around and running around to Meatball Madness, the Burger Bash. You went to Ferran Andrea. But before you go, can you just say what you sort of learned this weekend?
So it was my first time meeting all those like celebrity chefs and everyone, and just being in this like huge event. So, like, it was just amazing opportunity, and like interviewing those like people, like I had to like throw myself in, just like, you know.
You did.
Yep.
You totally.
That's the hats off.
Well, hats off. Well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And sitting to your left is a gentleman who's going anonymous. He had contacted me via, I don't know how you got my cell phone, but you did. And you wanted to come on and just sort of respond about being a big member of the Yelp community. And Yelp is the other side of the food world. Before anyone sort of like steps over your lines or anything, can you just tell me what is your name? Scone514? Is that your name?
It was close. Actually, you know, Jason, if you look at your cell phone right now, you probably got at least 3 to 4 people retweeting that my actual scone name is Scone77.
Scone77. And does that have anything to do with breakfast? Are you doing breakfast stuff?
I love breakfast.
All right. So you go out there every day, and you have a 9 to 5, but you're one of these blog people.
I'm a Yelper.
You're a Yelper?
I'm a Yelper.
All right, what are you covering right now? Let's talk.
You know, I just did a transition. I was previously doing dinner service. People might have followed me. My name was Filet Mignon Baby. So you might have followed me under there, but due to a little mix-up at Del Posto, I kind of had to retire that name. And
yeah, you pissed off Joe Bastianich.
Well, I said a couple of things that maybe I shouldn't
have said.
Usually
it's the other way around, but...
So I went underground for a couple of weeks, and I reemerged as Scone77, and I've been on the brunch scene ever since.
And you're covering a lot of interesting restaurants in Midtown right now. Can you tell me about a couple of those?
Yeah, well, you know, I go in there, and I like to do a certain procedure. You know, Saturday night, I'm in bed by at latest 7:30, 8 p.m., so I can get well-rested. You know, I wake up 30 minutes before I get to the restaurant, at least 30 minutes before it opens.
Yeah.
You know, I wait outside. I like to say that it's not a true brunch unless I can see the sleep in my server's eyes.
Meaning they had a tough night the night before and they're still a little tired.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I need some suffering. So I get to the table, and the stopwatches start.
Okay.
Right away.
The stopwatches. You're timing what?
I'm timing how long it takes them to pour my water.
Okay.
How long it is until I get my bread.
Okay.
If they ask for salt, pepper, olive oil, lemon slices, lime slices, orange slices. I've got like 7 stopwatches on the table.
And you don't necessarily cover all this stuff, but this is something you put in your final report.
Final report. Also, it factors into the tip pile.
Okay, and tip pile is meaning that what the server is going to get at the end of their dinner or breakfast, whatever.
Exactly. You know, I like to start at 20%. You know, I know my bill will probably be between $50 and $60.
Okay.
So I put 20% on the table.
And that's per person, $50 or $60? You're dining alone?
I'm usually dining alone.
Okay. Well, I don't know why. Well, I want
how many pictures do you take on your camera?
That's Frank Mignolo from Best Pizza chiming in there.
Oh yeah. Well, I've got the alarms going. I've got my SLR. I've got my
iPhone. Single lens reflex camera.
I've got at least four cameras.
Yeah.
One more thing before we go into our next segment, I wanted to ask you what your most interesting restaurant experience has been.
You know, I would say that the most exciting brunch that I've had in Manhattan is actually at the TGI Fridays in Midtown.
The one where they film Cocktail.
Exactly.
Wow.
It blew my mind.
And a dish that stands out?
I would say eggs over the moon.
Moon's over Miami.
That's the one.
I think that might be a different restaurant dish, but thank you, Scone514.
Scone77.
Thank you for your time. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk with Best Pizza. We're going to learn what it's like to fly to Hong Kong and teach everybody to make pizza. Thanks again. The morning after.
Okay, amici. Adesso vi cantiamo una bella canzone italiana. Allontano solo. Vicky, come on. Vieni qua. Sul palco. On the stage.
Porti casone con un stemma a rete, una cuppulella che vi si era isata, passa scampagnando per tu l'edo, con mano guappo per te fa guardare.
Vedi? Ok! Tu vuoi fare americano, americano, americano,
round to man, 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 whiskey and soda. All right, we're back, we're back, we're back, and we're going to talk to a bunch of people here. Our first interview here is with Pank Vignello. I'm actually Calucci. And I'm horrible with Italian last name.
Yep,
I think it's that self-deprecating Italian in me. But we had worked together about a year ago at Polino's Bar and Pizzeria. You were there for about 6 months and kind of like getting ready to open this restaurant. And I heard a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a year. Actually, your anniversary is...
Yeah, it was 2 days ago, 1 year. Okay. Served our first slice of pizza on September 30th. So.
And you're what I call a pizza traditionalist. And you embrace that whole other history of it, not like this sort of new sort of wave we see with 12-inch pizzas that forgot about where the Americanized end of it. Can you talk a little bit about what your philosophy with your pizzeria?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I grew up in Brooklyn and Long Island. So a pizzeria to me was always a place that you walked in and grabbed a slice of pizza and sat down. It's not... To me, it wasn't a restaurant where you actually sat down at a table and a server came over and, you know, you ordered through a server and then paid a bill. It was just you come in, you grab a quick slice, you know, you talk a little bit to the guy behind the counter and you're out in a couple of minutes. So when I had the opportunity to open up a pizzeria, that's a style pizzeria that I wanted to go with.
And when you're a kid, is there a place that you think of that pops up? For me, it's Lee's Tavern in Staten Island.
Lee's
I don't know
Tavern, yeah. I mean, for me, I grew up on 66th Street and 17th Avenue. So if I walk a block up, I'm at Da Vinci's, which was this place to always go to for a round slice. And we would go right down the block to J&V if we wanted a square. So,
and
L&B Spumoni Gardens was always, it was always the, you know, the monster that it is today, but it was always packed. So I would just always walk up the block to 18th Avenue and get a slice.
And now it's interesting because the entire food community has embraced pizza and is actually taking it serious now. And you're doing something that is, you're going to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And they came to you.
Yeah.
Your success. And what are you doing out there?
Well, it's funny. Early on, we were lucky enough to get a nice New York Times review. And I graduated from the Culinary Institute. And I was just in the pizzeria one day, just doing what we do, and I got a phone call from an alumni that now works in Hong Kong at this place called the America's Club, which I guess is essentially a urban country club where a lot of businessmen travel and will stay when they're in Asia. And they've been always wanting to do a pizza demo. They always wanted to do pizza in Hong Kong or in China, but I guess they never really had the right guy. And when they read the review, they saw that I was a CIA student. We're an alumni, and half of their staff is from the Culinary Institute. So they invited me down, and I was like, sure, I would love to.
I just wanted to say I'm so happy for you, because working in restaurants for 15 years, I've heard so many people say about their next idea and how they, not necessarily you were saying you were bitter where you were, but how they don't like where they're at and they're going to open another place and it never happens.
Yeah.
And you're one of the places that we were working together, and you were constantly talking about this place.
Yeah.
And you opened it. And
where
you
are
got,
you exactly?
Yeah.
I'm on Havemeyer Street in between North 7th and North 8th in Williamsburg.
Okay, so I can go afterwards for a slice.
Yeah, come with me. We'll take the train back together.
We should go.
I have a car outside.
All right, even better.
So now you got covered by the Times. They picked up, other than the pizza, they picked up a dish. Was a meatball sub? I mean, what was that? Is that something that, like, you ordered 10 pounds on a Tuesday and you got covered and you ordered 800 pounds on Wednesday?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was a Serious Eats, Ed Levine, that really came in and tasted our sandwich, and he just wrote like a quick little sentence that it was his favorite meatball sandwich he ever had or something along those lines. And we went from selling like 5 meatball sandwiches a day to like 30 before 5 o'clock the next day. So it was really nice. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much just pizza by the slice, a couple sandwiches. We really try to like embrace the community. It's important that the people on our block are really comfortable in the pizzeria. We've been there a year. We've been lucky enough to have a lot of new families be around us, a lot of new people moving into the neighborhood. So while there's still a lot of old people left in Williamsburg, we're also able to kind of garner that new, I guess, hipster, if you will, moving into the neighborhood that doesn't have a neighborhood pizzeria yet, you know?
We have a lot of listeners that are outside the city, and can you sort of just dissuade them from going to other, like, chain pizzerias? Like, can you just talk to, there's always one in a town, and then people always go to the Papa John's or Domino's because it's a 5-10 minute delivery.
You don't want to get me started with that.
Can you just talk about the two extra steps that you take, one maybe with cheese and with sauce, that makes the entire difference?
Well, to me, like, when you're dealing with pizza, it's
the difference is Wonder Bread or artisanal bread.
Exactly.
But
Domino's is Wonder Bread.
100%.
But can you?
I think a lot. I think with pizza, and I'm glad to say that I feel like I grew up in a neighborhood where the glory days of pizza was still going on in the late 80s, early 90s, and that's when I grew up as a kid eating pizza. And as time went on, things changed. Like, those old-timers weren't in the pizzerias anymore. All those old values weren't there. And you started to see just people looking at the bottom line, and you started seeing nice, fresh mozzarella cheese kind of turn into, like, waxy, nasty cheese, and nice, maybe home-cured pepperonis or gabagols turn into store-bought, you know, really nasty, salty flavor, disgusting.
You're buying
stuff,
a lot of your stuff from Salomea Belese.
So when we got the opportunity to open the place, to me, it was important. Like, you mentioned Domino's in these places. To me, no one really cares about the food that they're putting out. Everyone cares about the bottom line and how much money they're going to make. But we opened up a pizzeria really caring about the food, caring about the people in the neighborhood, and caring about putting out a healthy product. And I felt that the success will come along with that. So that's kind of the principles that we followed. And, you know, we make our own mozzarella. And when I say that, we stretch our own curd. And I'm able to control the amount of salt that's in it. No one's going to tell me what's going to be in my cheese, you know. As far as our sauce goes, we keep it really simple with just a little bit of kosher salt, and that's it.
San Marzano tomato?
Yep. We use a Teo San Marzano tomato right now. But we would actually like to switch over to an American product because we're an American pizzeria, and I think that's the kind of direction that we would like to go in.
Cool. Well, we're going to go in a second into 86list.com. Before we do that, I just wanted to ask you a question. Can you just tell me a little bit more about how are you just – am I calling a 718 number to – order the pizza, or is there a website?
How
can we get in touch with you, and then what's your guys' next step?
So the best way to get in touch with us is basically just call Best Pizza. The number is 718-599-2210. You can order a pie. We also have a website, which is bestpiz.za.com. It's a little awkward, but it works.
Those Best Pizza people didn't want to sell it. Frank, thank you for your time. We're going to go right now into 86list.com with the hot job of the week. Laura Wertz, are you there?
Thanks for having me, man.
I'm here. How are you, Jason?
Laura Wertz. Go ahead. Hot job of the week.
Hot job of the week. This week it comes from Cafe Peddler in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. They are looking for talented baristas with a strong sense of customer service and attention to detail, and they have both full and part-time positions available.
How many tattoos are needed for this job?
or leather hats?
I don't know, maybe a little attitude and some tattoos. I think that's important.
Yeah, exactly. I don't trust my barista unless they have a star tattoo and something super ironic. One other thing. What else is going on in any other traffic coming? That's Arthur Schwartz's cell phone, if anyone's
wondering. Oh, yeah, so we love it. It's the veteran.
The veteran.
The man was born out of a radio microphone.
And I can't get mad. It's almost like yelling at you.
I really am sorry.
Joe Bastianich calling him because he was mad about the thing we just said.
No, we didn't say that on the air.
We didn't. Laura, any other traffic in the food world? What's going on? Is a hot time? What else is going on?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, let's see. We've got jobs for managers at Mirandi in the West Village. Still looking for a pastry chef at Restaurant North up in Armonk, New York. Yes, there's a lot going on. I think a lot of restaurants are, you know, they're building up for the busy season. It's here.
Once again, Laura Wertz from 86list.com, who is this is a mom and pop shop website. They do industry based job listings, and you're in the process of getting married. Where are you at? Did you get your florist yet?
Oh, I'm going dress shopping this weekend. So
oh, with
I'm
who? With who? Is
that.
Is your mother-in-law going?
No, my mom's coming into town, and my sister and I and my mother are going out tomorrow.
Well, good luck. Don't drink too much champagne. see you next week. Laura Wertz, 86list.com. Okay. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back to a legend, Arthur Schwartz, morning after.
Yeah.
That was Arthur Schwartz just serenading the crowd here with the story. Hopefully he'll get a little bit more in depth into stuff.
No, I wanted to gossip.
Oh, he's not.
It's not gossip, actually, because it happened to me.
Right. Not hearsay.
My next guest is Arthur Schwartz, a food maven, except the traditional definition of connoisseur is too small. Arthur Schwartz has been covering the New York City food scene for over 30 years.
40 years.
40.
Over 40 years.
From writing for the Daily News to hosting a radio show on 710 WR, he has seen it all. He's an elder statesman of the food world, and he's stepped back a little these days and here to discuss New York City restaurants and talk a little bit about his new diet, which includes Roberta's Pizza.
Which includes a one night out of pizza, because I, you know, my home away from home is Naples and Salerno. The home of pizza.
Okay.
And I teach pizza. So I was thrilled to find a diet where once a week I'm supposed to go out for a Neapolitan pizza.
This sounds like the kind of diet I could definitely.
No, it's actually, it's a very, I've lost, I don't know how much weight because I don't weigh myself.
You look amazing.
Well, thank you, but I'm just like down to my last fat clothes. So
before we go into the diet and all that stuff, I wanted to bring up one thing. I was serious when I was talking in the intro. Mm-hmm. I used to drive around a truck in 90.
In a truck?
97.
You don't look like a truck driver.
96, 97 in my dad's van, and I used to deliver for a famous bakery called Andrew and Allen's in Staten Island. Mm-hmm. I used to get $5 per delivery plus a tip, and it was between 9 and 11. I would go nuts because the Yankees would bump him sometimes, or somebody. There was some other thing that would bump
Rutgers.
His show.
Rutgers. It was more like Rutgers.
And it would piss. It would make my day insane because I would listen to it. And
especially since Rutgers always lost.
That was a that was a daily show, I believe.
At one point I was on 7 days a week.
How tough is it to do that much content with food and make it relevant?
Actually, not hard at all, as you know. It's a great gig.
It's fun.
You know, the hard day was Sundays because I had a 2-hour show and I was frequently buy a sports game or something. Yeah. And I didn't have my local audience. I was syndicated across the country, but in Podunk, Iowa, they're not calling a New York guy with my accent. But they listened, but they were scared by me, I think.
But did
so then I had to do monologues.
Was there a ritual that you got in to make this stuff relevant, for example?
Well, it was a call-in show. So on a day where we just did call-ins, the audience determined the content of the show. Let me give you my background, because I grew up in a food-obsessed family in Brooklyn.
Please.
Jewish. But in a Jewish, Chinese, Italian community.
Bensonhurst? Or
no, Marine Park.
Marine Park.
Not far.
Okay.
And so it was all single family homes. We didn't have any apartment houses. It was almost suburban and very middle class. And most people did not relate to Manhattan. They had businesses in Brooklyn. The women stayed home. I was a 50s kid. They were all still staying at home. My mother was never home. She was out shopping. But anyway, so we knew each other's food, the Chinese American, the Italian American, and the Jewish American, and everybody knew everybody else's business as well as food.
Yeah.
So that was my childhood. And then I went to college, and actually, because I wanted to be a veterinarian, I became a food science major.
Wow.
So I had 2 years of actual agriculture and food science, and then all of a sudden I decided, no, I wanted to be a writer, and I switched to journalism, and I graduated from college, and within a year I became the food editor of Newsday. Yeah. And that was just by luck, because I was desperate to not be a school teacher anymore, actually right down the street here. And it was a horrible neighborhood.
And at that time, I think you really didn't want to be here.
You know, you did not want to be here. This was, the choice was teach in Bushwick or go to Vietnam. And Bushwick was only slightly less dangerous than Vietnam.
What do you make a week in a job? I don't know, like a job like that. Like
why?
And we're writing for an editor for Newsday.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. You should ask.
I'm just wondering.
Because I was married. My wife was still in college. And as a school teacher, I was earning $125 a week. And I was going to go up to $135 very soon. And we just got by on that.
Okay.
So I had to earn $125 as a journalist. And I was looking for, I wanted to be a reporter or a desk editor. I love the copy desk. I'm a real stickler. Anyway, which doesn't, you know, you can't do this anymore. Even the New York Times gets things so wrong because nobody on the copy desk.
Because you got to get it out.
I'm sorry. We had to get it out in my day, too.
Right.
And it was actually more difficult because we didn't have computers. In any case, I was desperate to get out of teaching, and I had to earn $125 a week. There were no jobs that paid more than really $100. But then one of my mother's friends said, well, maybe if you have a specialty, you can get a little more. And just such a good cook and you know about wine, maybe you can peddle yourself. That was my hobby. You could peddle yourself as a food writer.
Yeah.
She didn't know anything, but because she, but it gave me the idea to look under F for food instead of E for editor in the New York Times that next Sunday. And I found an ad, unbelievable, assistant food editor, large suburban daily, right to this box number. So I figured, what do I have to lose?
A stamp.
Well, you know, I gave it some thought on the toilet.
And
I wrote a very flip letter saying, this is my dream job. I have no way to prove I can do it. Attached is my resume. I mean, I pretty much had just graduated from college, but I did have some very important internships while I was in college. And I had won some awards, I have to add. So I had a good resume for a college kid. And I was also, it ended up, not threatening to the person who had to hire me at Newsday. Because years later, I was there for 9 years. Yeah. And that was really my school. When people say, oh, where did you learn how to cook? I said, I learned from, you know, ethnic grandmothers all over Long Island. Because in the early 70s, those old ladies who knew the real stuff were still alive. And that was my job to go out and interview them. And I learned how to cook from all different ethnic groups.
Can you talk, because we were on the phone, and one thing you brought up, which I loved, which was kind of where you're at now, and you reflect on it, how there's nothing, you were saying how there's
I'm so jaded.
No, you know, but the thing is,
going to restaurants anymore.
But the thing is, a lot of people in New York are jaded because we do eat out all the time, and we don't appreciate it at home, and I thought what you said was so relevant because
what I say?
You were just like, there's nothing interesting going on in Manhattan. All the interesting restaurants are in Brooklyn, hence we're in Roberta's.
I feel like the old ladies in Marine Park where I grew up, they all said, what are you going to Manhattan for? You go to the theater a couple times a year. Otherwise, everything you need is in Brooklyn.
Why are you going to the city?
Did you grow up in Brooklyn or in a borough?
I grew up in the city, but it was like when I was going out to the Brooklyn, that was traveling. I mean, like we went out.
Well, you were in Manhattan?
Yeah, but our vacation was like Coney Island. But,
okay, well, when I was a kid, until I went to summer camp at age 9 and had a bunkmate who was from Stuyvesant Town, I didn't know
fancy.
That, I didn't know they allowed children to sleep over in Manhattan. I thought you only were allowed to go for the day. But we did, because my father was a very adventurous eater. So we always went to ethnic places, and when without me, he would go with my mother on Saturday night to some new, you know, cutting edge place. I'll never forget after the Four Seasons opened, that's 1959. Was my parents, I think, I don't know, I can't figure out what anniversary, but it was I think it was their 15th anniversary. Yeah. They went to the Four Seasons right after it opened, and they were so impressed that they woke us up when my sister and I came home to show us the menu, which was the size of this coffee table.
which your dad got into his jacket? Like, is this a compliment?
You asked for, you know, a place like that, because may I have the menu? And they would say, sure. You know, in all my years as a restaurant critic, I used to steal menus.
Wait.
And only got caught once.
But in a restaurant critic, you're going to allow... as an anonymous critic going in?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And you would take stuff. So on top of being have to hide, you'd also have to steal a menu. Before we go into a break, Arthur, can you tell us a little inside information on the break? Can you tell us
about Lydia Bastianich?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, yelling at Joe Bastianich. That was
a good story. He cannot take criticism, apparently. I'm not the only restaurant. I understand his irritation these days with everybody in the world thinking they're a restaurant critic.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't review a restaurant until I was writing about food for 10 years.
Yeah.
So, and then only then did I, and after a lifetime of cooking, I only felt then was I prepared to judge somebody else's cooking. So, and I feel that, you know, all these kids out there who are photographing that, I mean, first of all, they're so irritating. to everybody Gina else Hong. In the dining room.
At Best Pizza. If someone's in Best Pizza snapping pictures without asking, we start screaming, blogger we, alert, blogger
we,
alert.
And we, yeah, take, yeah, we hit him with a bat. We bring the bat out.
Anyway, so Joe doesn't... I reviewed, I don't even remember what restaurant, and it probably wasn't even that critical because mostly I like what he does. But I must have said something that irritated him, and I was standing with his mother at some event, and he walked over and he started berating me. And I just didn't know what to say except to turn to Lydia and say, didn't you ever teach him any manners?
that's a little...
Anyway, he was. Then he blustered, and she got him quiet.
Well, we're going to go into
As
our
I said,
next...
I know him since he was in a stroller behind the bar.
And we're talking about Joe Bastianich here with Arthur Schwartz. We're going to go into our next segment. And you're going to talk... Speaking of thin, you're going to tell us about your diet.
Yeah.
And Ben, you're in there. Can you order Arthur Schwartz here, margarita pie? Thank you very much.
I know that we are young, and I know that he may love me. But I just can't be with you like this anymore. Alejandro.
And we're back here, morning after. I'm sitting here with New York City critic, radio personality, Arthur Schwartz, a legend in my world. He's going to talk about
I'm
his
so
diet.
Flattered.
100% of
makes
it.
Me
I'm not
feel
a,
so old.
That was not me embellishing to get you to the studio. I really feel
no,
like
but I'm enjoying being old lately.
The alternative.
Arthur, just so you know, I knew it might have been 40 years. I put 30 to make you feel a little bit better. Just so you know, in the bio.
I started at Newsday at the end, right after Thanksgiving, at 1969.
Okay.
And I left for the Daily News in 1979.
Year I was born.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
No one wants to hear that.
No, yeah. All right, it's okay. So, you could be my grandson. I don't know. Not quite. Anyway, and then I started at the WR in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I'm still on an NPR station, by the way.
And you're at Robin Hood Radio?
Robin Hood Radio in Sharon, Connecticut.
What's, tell me about this diet, because the second I talked to you.
Let me just say that all my years as a professional food writer and radio person, I never was able to live the life that I talked about, which was to stay at home and cook. And in fact, my first 10 years as a food writer, I had no interest in restaurants at all. I thought that was not as noble as telling people how they could manage their to eat every day. So, but then when I went to the Daily News, by that time, nobody even knew what a food editor did. They only knew about a restaurant critic. So I made myself the restaurant critic at the Daily News. And now I'm home. I'm not writing anymore. I do teach a lot. And I'm enjoying that I can cook two meals a day. And in May, at my cooking school in Italy, one of my assistants went on a diet. And in 7 months, she lost 70 pounds. Listen, she's a lot younger than me, so it gets off quicker. So I said, how did you do this? And by the way, her sister, the same. And also, just to stay on any diet regimen for 6 or 7 months is a feat unto itself. Anyway, she gave me the diet, which was given to her by a nutritionist in Salerno. And it's just a very well-balanced diet with small amounts of lean protein.
Horse meat?
Well, they don't eat horse meat in Salerno. In fact, my business partner, Baronessa Cecilia, who breeds horses, when the few times we've been in places like Puglia or Verona where they do eat horse meat, she sits at the other end of the table from me because she won't even go near it.
I like my horse meat medium rare, but that's just me.
No, I like it raw. It's best raw.
Okay, cool. It's like revenge.
You have to have horse meat tartare in Verona. I'll give you the name of the butcher shop. When you go and it's ground at the moment. Okay, it's wonderful. Anyway, back to what?
No, you were saying
the diet. So the diet.
But
is
do you feel
the,
like
the reason I'm able to stay on this now?
Is this a real diet, or is this one of those like?
Well, I've lost more than 2 pant sizes.
No, I mean you look great, but I when I heard you,
I have a lot more pant sizes to go yet. But
are you do you feel?
I feel
fulfilled
better
food wise.
Yes, because I get to eat pasta every day or almost every day.
Okay.
But you know what? I eat a sensible amount. 3 ounces of pasta today for lunch. I had my 3 ounces of pasta was linguine, just because of the package was
like a
open.
Whole wheat pasta or something.
No. No.
Anybody?
I will not eat something I don't enjoy eating, and I don't enjoy whole wheat pasta.
Fair enough.
The only time I've made it where I've enjoyed, and I've tried it, believe me, many times, many brands, but the only time I really enjoyed it was one day I wanted to make a Chinese dish, which I'm not good at, by the way. So I'd still go out for Asian foods of all kinds because I'm not
You're a good Jewish boy.
I'm a good Jewish cook. I'm a great Italian cook. Yeah. And my partner, if it doesn't taste Southern, he's gotten to be like an old Southern Italian man. You know, he's like, he only wants the same food all the time. So, you know, this time I made a Chinese dish with whole wheat pasta. And out of the context of Italian cuisine, it tasted fine to me. But in the context, it doesn't taste fine to me. No, and I eat so many vegetables, I don't need to do that. So the vegetables, the diet is unlimited vegetables of any kind. Twice a week you can have pasta with legumes, a smaller amount of pasta, 2 ounces instead of 3, but then you get 3/4 of a cup of cooked legumes, which is really quite a lot. Extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons a day, 2 teaspoons at lunch, 2 teaspoons at dinner, and 2 teaspoons free-floating. And I manage now to cook with a lot less oil than I used to. And then I only eat meat maybe 3 meals a week.
Okay.
And the rest of the time I'm eating seafood or vegetarian.
No, anyone that's listening.
Eggs once a week, pizza once a week, sushi once a week, because one day you get a rice day. So I take that news and go
to
out the sushi.
This seems like the New York City Chamber of Commerce diet.
Why is that?
No, it's just like everything you could find on your block.
Well,
you know?
Here's the deal. You know, the thing is, this diet is culturally Southern Italian.
No.
I mean, it includes, for instance, on Sunday you're allowed to have 2 ounces of mortadella, prosciutto, or salami. They don't want you to be without anything that you crave. And these are the things that I crave that they crave. So it's fine.
So. Yeah.
So I had pasta today with a fresh tomato sauce with tuna, canned tuna.
Okay.
I have an herb garden, so I was afraid the basil might die on me in the next few days, so I harvested everything. So it had tons of fresh basil in it, capers, some gaeta olives I cut up.
Green or black? Oh.
No, gaeta or purple.
Purple, sorry. Yeah.
Higher in antioxidants than green.
I was thinking of Serginola. I was getting my olives mixed up. So if anyone's listening and they wanted to sort of buy a book or any sort of
The 2 books that of mine that are still in print are Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking, which is, by the way, kosher.
Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And the other one that still is The Southern Italian Table. Which was supposed to be a very big book. This is why I'm not writing anymore. It was the worst work experience of my life because now, unless you're a celebrity chef or have a very well-known restaurant and you're willing to do all, and you have the possibility to market your own book, you won't get a contract.
Yeah. That's what
You won't get one that's worth doing anyway. I mean, the work isn't worth doing.
And your radio show that's on Robin Hood?
Well, I'm on one day a week on Monday mornings. It's podcast on robinhoodradio.com.
Okay.
And it's just a half an hour of schmooze like you do.
Thank you. And we're going to have some pizza in a little while. I wanted to thank you for your time. We're going to take a break and then come into a two with Chew, with Jim Chew. Arthur,
if anybody would like
a
copy of this diet, which I have actually written up with American measurements and recipes and menus, and it's the only thing that keeps me on the computer these days. They can write to me at mavensmail, mavensmail@AOL.
And he answers because I asked him to do the interview and he answered right away. Once again, thank you, Arthur Schwartz, for your time. We're going to go into another break here. We're going to talk to Jimmy Chew, have a two with Chew, and we're going to move our separate ways. Morning, Ev.
Yes.
A I come from down in the valley, where mister, when you're young, they bring you up to do like your daddy done. Me and Mary, we met in high school, and she was just 17. We drive out of this valley down to where the fields were green. We go down to the river, and into the river we dive.
Hey, we're back. We're in our last segment. I want to thank Arthur Schwartz. I'm being serious about that. I listened to this guy when I was a kid, and he's one of the reasons why I got into food, other than sort of my mom and working in restaurants and everything.
But you're 32?
I'm 32 years old. I've been in the business for 16 years. My first job was at Penny Feathers, which you probably know. You probably reviewed it at one point.
Nice Staten Island boy.
Nice Staten Island boy.
It's only an extension of Brooklyn, you understand.
And the worst part about being a Staten Island Italian boy is when a older Jewish man tells you more about Italy than you ever would know.
Well, you know, but I practically live down there. You know, I mean, I'm there. At least the last 10 years, I've been back and forth, you know, four or five times a year, and sometimes months at a time. So, you know, if I can tell you the difference between the pizza in Salerno up the hill from the pizza in Salerno down the hill, it's because I've eaten a lot of it.
And I hope you only have one of those pizzas a week, because that's part of your diet.
Now
we're going to move on. Two with Chew. Bad. Jack, we're gonna queue up a segment called Two. Jim Chew is owner-operator of Joe's Restaurant. Chew with Chew. Here we go. Jim Chew, you're on the hot seat.
All right. Today, the fucking rant is this. What is up with cooks today? People come in here, you wonder what the business is. You know what? You're working in a kitchen. This is what you're getting paid an hour. This is your station. This is what you're going to cook. This is who you're cooking with. And then what happens? What happens one day? You decide not to show up. Not show up? Who the fuck are you that you're not going to show up to work? You don't call. You don't write. You don't send a letter. That's not a reach around. You just screwed yourself. You screwed the business you work for. You screwed the industry you said, oh, I love. Arthur Schwartz just told me about his whole life, about he lived this thing. You come in here, maybe you went to cooking school, maybe you saw some shit on TV and thought you were going to be around for like 20 minutes and I'll do this thing that Mario Batali does. Mario Batali was cooking in a restaurant you never even fucking heard of on Cornelius Street called Poe before anything was anybody, and he made it right. And what are you doing? And I understand my restaurant. Okay, I'm nobody. I got a nobody restaurant. My chef's a nobody. Why do we open a restaurant? Because we like to fucking feed people. And you lied to me, you nameless bastard. You came to me, you cashed my fucking check. And you fucking called. You called in sick when you weren't fucking sick. I took it. And you didn't show up. I understand that. But you know what? Then you did it to Marco Canora. Marco Canora, this is a guy who actually was up for Iron Chef. And could have won. I'm not going to leave that up to Mark Porgione. I don't want to piss that guy off. He's like an angry guy. But Marco Canora had two cooks, no show. Who does that? If it is up to us in the future, that these guys are going to just leave their job, like, what's going to happen? I'm going to be living in a nursing home. You're going to forget to wipe my ass because you want to find something else to do. I'm going to find myself in Oregon sucking on a fucking tail.
Oh, that's Jim Chew, everybody. Thank you. That was Two with Chew.
I have 7 seconds left. And I'd just like to thank my mom for helping me be such an expressive individual.
That's Two with Chew. I wanted to thank everybody for coming in today. I wanted to say, I always forget to follow me on Twitter, @JasonColucci at Twitter.com. We're announcing a few things. We just started production on a television show. A restaurant a popular restaurant in Brooklyn is opening their second location, and we're doing a reality-based TV show. Myself and my business partner, we're going to cover it, Righteous Fiction Productions. And it is going to be a real reality restaurant show where you see you know, fights. You see the cooks doing drugs in the walk-in box and people having sex and everything.
As long
it's
as
a reality.
It's not my drugs, it's okay.
Something's never changed.
So it's we just had a production on that. I just wanted to thank everyone involved with that. I think the first shoot is on Tuesday when they get the keys to the place. I can't really talk about the restaurant group because they're trying to. They don't want to really overhype their opening and review period. I want to thank a bunch of people for coming in today. Arthur Schwartz for his time.
Thank you.
Scone 514. Gina Hong, foreign correspondent. Jim Chu. Frank Pinello from Best Pizza. He's going out to Hong Kong. Frank, can you come back and talk about the when you come when after the experience and
I
tell us what it was?
There will be stories.
All the massages you had.
And I need some recommendations for Hong Kong.
I'm Jason Colucci, and this is the morning after. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The Heritage Meat Shop has just opened in the Essex Street Market. Open from 9 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 6 on Sundays, the Heritage Meat Shop supports independent family farms and animal welfare approved and certified humane raising standards. Most importantly, they offer a wide variety of heritage breeds. So stop by, get a sandwich, try the charcuterie, the Heritage Meat Shop at the Essex Street Market.